As the winter is settling out and we just got over Christmas, what is better than a January sale? Over at Cuddly, you know we love Cuddly over here at Bloody Good Reads. They have an amazing offer at the moment for hooded blankets through January. You can save £30 off an £89 hoodie. They are breathable, they are soft, cuddly, and best this time of year as well. So £59 and get a beautiful hoodie. One size fits all, you'll be warm throughout this time. It's more expensive nowadays, so why not buy a beautifully warm hooded blanket from our good friends over at Cuddly. Later in the month, there will be some other deals as well. I keep an eye on the podcast coming up as well. So if you head down to the description below, you can click the link, you can get your £30 off that as well. Go and check them out, go and buy it, and just tell them we sent you. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show this week. Hi, and welcome to Bloody Good Reads. I am your host, Mark Goddard, and we're back on our horror binge through some of the most amazing authors in the horror genre. And this week's guest, I have been told by also one of our guys from the website, has the most amazing horror name out there. His brand new book is coming out from Cemetery Dance. Coming soon, by the time this podcast is out, it should be out. But welcome to the podcast this week, John Mantooth.
Thanks, Mark. I'm really glad to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. And so what we'd like to do here on Bloody Good Reads is force authors to pick three books they love, because I am a bastard. But what we'd like to do before we get to that stage is ask every guest, how do we get into the horror genre?
That's interesting, because I'm not sure I have an easy answer for that, other than that's just what I've always enjoyed reading and writing. But I've also enjoyed, you know, fantasy and science fiction as well, and mystery and crime. So, but almost everything that I ever wrote came out dark, I guess. So I sort of, my very first book was The Year of the Storm. And, that came out in 2013. And honestly, when, the editor contacted me about that book and was, they were thinking about, this was with Berkeley, they were thinking about purchasing it. And she said, I just don't know how to classify it. And she said, you know, it feels like it's got horror elements. It feels like it's got fantasy elements. It also feels a little bit like literary fiction. And so actually, she asked me to do a rewrite and push it in one direction or another. And so I just chose to push it in horror. And then people seemed to identify with that book as a horror novel. Although when I wrote it, that was not really what I was planning on accomplishing.
More like dark fantasy, was you kind of planning first off, or?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely more of a fantasy. And then those dark tendencies just sort of came out as I wrote it. But it was also a very sort of rural novel, very Southern. And that's kind of my sweet spot there is Southern sort of supernatural.
Like Southern Gothic kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So what was your kind of reading habits like growing up? Was you quite a big reader?
Yeah.
In school, or?
I was a pretty big reader. For me, early on, it was just the usual kids' books. You know, Encyclopedia Brown was a big one that I remember. A series called The Great Brain. I don't know if your listeners would remember that one, but that was one of my favorite series as a young kid. And but my goal was always to read off my father's bookshelf. He had a bookshelf of what I considered, you know, real books, adult books. And, you know, he had Stephen King, he had, Dean Koontz, and he had, a lot of crime writers like, Elmore Leonard and Ed McBain and guys like that. And, eventually he started letting me read those books. I was probably about in the fifth or sixth grade. And that really changed me a lot. And that's probably the first time I started considering how I would like to do something like that and write books one day. And actually one of the books I'm going to be mentioning, is closely related to my dad. So I'll wait and probably talk more about that when you ask about my books, but
okay. Well, you probably you half segued into it, so let's do that then. Okay. First, so again, what we like to do here on the podcast is force us to pick three books. So what is your first bloody good read?
Well, I would have to say Different Seasons by Stephen King would be my first one, and it's sort of one that I always come back to. And in fact, it was one that is closely connected to my father, who was really is my biggest influence in terms of reading. He wasn't a writer, but every time I sit down to write, I'm thinking he's my reader. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm thinking, is this something my dad would like? Is this something dad would like? Because he just liked all the same stuff I did as far as reading. And I was walking just on a Saturday morning, walking past his room, and he was just laughing like a fool. And I asked him what was so funny, and he held up this book, and it was Different Seasons. And he immediately started proceeding to read to me. I don't know if you've read the book, but in The Body, which more famously became the movie Stand By Me. But he was reading a scene from The Body about the famous pie-eating contest. And he just sat down and read the whole thing to me, and I was hooked at that point and got the book myself and devoured it. It's if you're not familiar with it, it's four novellas that sort of each represent a season. But yeah, that's to me, that's probably the book that most represents, you know, kind of what I'm going for when I write, because those aren't straightforward horror tales by any means, but they all are sort of horror adjacent and sort of have dark undertones to them.
It's not a Stephen King one I've had picked yet, which is a running joke on this podcast. I'm going to get him banned at some point, but everybody picks a Stephen King at some point, but not had Different Seasons. And, you know, I love Stand By Me as a movie, not read the book. And it's kind of one I would like to read.
Yeah.
Kind of it's the back of the movie.
It's great. Yes. And that was the kind of the closure to the story is then after I'd finished the book, the movie had come out very recently after whenever I finished it. And then dad took me to see the movie. So that kind of, you know, a lot of good memories there around that book. And I reread it a few years ago, and I was surprised that the writing didn't seem as strong as I expected it to be, but the story's just definitely held up. I mean, he's such a storyteller, and they're just classic stories.
Which is why he gets picked so much on here. I know that, especially by American authors. He's a huge influence for a lot of American authors, some British authors, but you get some more of the kind of British names kind of dropped in there for British ones.
Right. But
to be fair, 80% of my guests are from America, so that's why I get so much Stephen King. No, that's definitely a good one to check out. Yeah, so good first choice.
Right.
So let's get into your writing. So when did your love of writing start? Was this more of a younger age thing, or kind of once you got to like an adult age?
Well, before I started writing, I guess I fell in love with telling stories. And I remember when I was a kid entertaining my younger sister and my cousin, who was my age, whenever we'd visit my grandmother's, she lived out in the country, her house and land sort of lended itself to spooky stories. And I liked nothing more than getting a reaction from them by telling them a scary story that I had made up. I mean, it was one thing to tell a story I had heard before, but I wanted to make them up and then see that they were scared, see that they enjoyed it, see that I had impressed them. So I think that was where it began. And then in my mind, like I'd said, when I started reading some of my dad's books off his bookshelf, I thought about how it'd be cool to be a writer one day, but I really was just, you know, I was a normal kid in every other way. And I just didn't have the patience or maturity to sit down and actually do any writing unless it was a school assignment or something like that. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old. And it's kind of like one of those moments where my wife was pregnant with our first child. And I sort of took stock about, you know, where are things going? What do I want to do? And I realized that I had never really given that a shot other than just thought about it a lot. So I sat down and started writing when I was 30. And I made the mistake of going straight into novels. because that's what I read. You know, I read novels, and so I thought I'll write novels. And to me, that for me, that was a mistake, because I wasn't ready to tell that kind of story yet. So, and I don't know how long you want me to go on. Do you?
Hey, chat away. I'm enjoying the chat.
Interrupt me if I get too lengthy in any answer.
No.
So I started trying to write some novels and just went straight to like sending them to publishers and they were getting sometimes even rejected. Just a lot of times they were getting ignored. And then I'd say, well, maybe I need one of these agent things. So I started sending them to agents and we're getting pretty bad rejections and responses. And so luckily what saved me as a writer, because I was about to give up, was deciding this, hey, maybe I just need to try a short story and maybe I could pull that off. And I did, I sat down and wrote a short story, and that first attempt ended up getting published and it was free, there was no payment or anything like that, but it was in a print magazine. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me the momentum to keep going. And I started writing short stories and started getting a little success at them and sort of learned how to tell a story through that process. And fast forward, let's see, because I started that when I was 30. I would have been 30 in 2002, I guess. So by 2012, I had enough for a collection. And that's when I sold my first book to Cheezine, who's no longer around, but they published my first collection of short stories. And then I tried a novel again and found I had a lot more success at it after I kind of learned the ropes.
I suppose it's the practice, isn't it? It's kind of honing your craft, getting your own kind of voice as well.
I think
it gives you the time to do it.
Absolutely, yeah. And I did not know how to do endings at all. It's like I would come up with these grand ideas for novels and all this stuff would happen. And then I would just write myself into a corner and I was just like, my imagination would fail or my just plotting would fail and I would just get stuck. But with the short stories, it taught me how to do an ending, and it taught me how to do not just the beginning of the story, but the middle and the ending too. So it's not everybody's path. Some people can jump straight into novels and never mess with short stories, but it definitely helped me to practice and gain confidence.
A lot of people do. I mean, a lot of people do start with shorts. I mean, this is about 90 episodes into it now. And a lot of the authors who I've talked to, most of them have started short. So,
yeah,
you know, it's always a good place to start. And it gets your name out there in a lot of the magazines and books as well. So, which is always good.
Yeah.
And that's how my first bit of published work, my only bit of published work was in a short story collection for no money. So, yeah. You know.
Well, yeah. And it gave, I think also the thing that helped me was it gave me confidence. I think so much of writing is confidence, at least for me. When you're feeling confident, you don't question, you don't second guess yourself as much. You're more free to try things. And when you're not feeling confident, then that sort of critical voice comes in and it really can make you struggle, is what I found over my career, if I can call it that.
So what was your first novel? Was that Year of the Storm?
Yes, it was The Year of the Storm. It was basically, I guess, Southern Gothic, go back to that term, might be the best way to pinpoint it. But it did have elements of some fantasy and horror in it as well. And it got nominated for a Bram Stoker Award and got, I guess, the short list or whatever for that, but didn't win. But my wife and I did fly out to, I think it was Portland that year. We'd been to a couple, but we flew out there for the award ceremony and didn't win, but it was good to get nominated. And that book, when I published that book, I really thought that I had all this publishing stuff figured out. Because it went to a big publisher, and Penguin was the publisher, and I just thought, wow, here I am, I've got it made. I first novel picked up by Penguin, but man, it's been tough since then. Honestly, the novel did not sell well. It was critically did well, and horror readers seemed to like it, but it didn't really find an audience beyond that at all. And So it made trying to sell my next novel. Well, another thing happened that really hurt me at that time is my agent retired right after we sold that novel. I was able to find another one, but it took a year or two. And then I was trying to sell my second book in 2015 and with my new agent, and we couldn't sell it. And when we heard the same thing from everybody, which was the sales record of the first novel is just not good. And we can't take a chance on this second one. And so I ended up, it's funny you mentioned the name Mantooth, because that is my real name, but I ended up having a pseudonym for three books that I published because that was sort of the solution we found. My agent and I and the publisher was like, we found a publisher that wanted to publish another book for me, Crooked Lane. They're an independent publisher. And they said, we want to buy this and we want a two book deal, but we want John to take a pseudonym. So I used the pseudonym Hank Early for those three books with them. And those were crime novels, which did sort of make a good delineation between Mantooth kind of sticks with the horror and Hank Early does the crime. So that tended to work out okay.
Which kind of goes back to kind of your kind of the books that you were kind of around when you're growing up as well. You know, your dad, you're saying your dad had a lot of the crime novels and the horror novels. So it's quite a nice.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that's always kind of been my sweet spot, and I'm glad I've gotten to really publish both, and it's interesting. But my most successful work sales wise has definitely been the Hank Early stuff, which you know is under my pseudonym. But maybe we can change that with these next couple that are coming out from Cemetery Dance. I should mention that the Year of the Storm Cemetery Dance is going to republish that.
Okay.
And reprint that in February. So that'll be, I've got Holy Ghost Road coming out in December and then another edition of The Year of the Storm in February.
Okay. So before we get into your recent books, let's go to your second choice. So what is your second Bloody Good Read?
My second one would be another one that I found sort of in childhood and then have revisited several times since and found it holds up just as good. And that is Watership Down. Speaking of British, I guess, authors, but yeah, that was one that just hit me like a ton of bricks when I was a kid. I guess I probably read that one when I was 12 or 13. And it was that book that people would always ask, you know, what's your favorite book? And I would say Watership Down. And then they would say, what's it about? And I'd say, well, it's about rabbits. And then that discussion was kind of ended at that point because people would go, oh, that sounds stupid. But it was anything but to me. I mean, it was just an incredible story that really had a lot of, I guess, human elements and human struggles in it. But it also still had the, you know, I don't know. I think at its heart, it's a quest story. And I've always appreciated those. But yeah, that would be my second.
And a movie that's traumatized children for many, many generations.
I've never seen the movie.
I've seen it. It's traumatizing for a young person. Okay. A lot of blood for a cartoon.
I said there's a Netflix series now too, and I haven't seen that either.
Is there?
Yeah.
I didn't know they did a Netflix one. Oh, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Good choice though. It's a very good choice. It's one of the ones we'd do kind of high school age here as well.
Yeah.
When there's classic novels that come up.
So. I reread it and I don't reread a lot of books. That's one of the weird things about me. Like a lot of authors talk about, well, I've reread this book so many times, but like I said, I reread different seasons, I think once. And I think I've reread Watership Down a total of three times. And that's it. Those are only books I really, because there's always something new to read. I think that the next pick I have not reread before.
I'm similar. I try with films. I can rewatch. That's never an issue. With books, I tend to, once I've read it, that's it. I won't go back to it.
Yeah,
I think it's in a way for me. It's more of a, I don't want to ruin the experience from the first time because you read it a second time. Sometimes you might not get as much out of it as the first read.
Yeah.
which I have found before, and that's why I don't go back to them. But no, it's a good way of doing it as well, because like I said, there's so many good books out there. And
yeah, there just seems like there's too many good new that I want to read, so it's hard to justify going back and read. But I did with that one, because that was one I wanted to see. Like, is it as good as I remember when I was a kid? And then I reread, I think I was probably in my 30s, or maybe I was in my 20s the first time I reread it, and then again in my 30s. And I liked it each time. So I may be due for another one at some point. Now that I'm in my 50s.
Very good choice. Very good choice. So from Year of the Storm, it was, you had Where the Dark Eyes Glances, you've had Shoebox Trainwreck, which is the only one I can find on Audible, which I am listening to at the moment, which is very good. But your most recent book is coming out. It's Holy Ghost Road.
Holy Ghost Road, that's right. Yep.
And it's coming out from our good friends over at Cemetery Dance. We had a lot of authors from Cemetery Dance recently. And they're doing some amazing, stellar work with a lot of new up-and-coming writers as well. So how did you get involved with Cemetery Dance? And tell us a bit about the new book.
Okay. Well, first of all, Kevin Lucia and I go, I guess, way back. Not that we were like way back close, but we've just kind of been in contact since years and years, because he was one of the people who had read and really liked Shoebox Trainwreck and The Year of the Storm. And so, and we had kind of maintained like a social media friendship. And I guess I remembered one of the things I thought was really cool is he's a teacher. I'm a teacher as well. And he had used Shoebox Trainwreck to teach to some of his classes, some of the stories in there. And I always thought that was just really cool. And so with Holy Ghost Road, it was sort of a last minute thing. I don't know if I should say, I don't know how all this stuff works, but we had actually almost sold it somewhere else. Like they wanted to buy it, but we were still like kind of, my agent was still kind of negotiating the terms of the deal kind of thing. And yeah. I just saw a post on Twitter from Kevin about, you know, about a book Cemetery Dance was publishing. And it, I didn't really know that Cemetery Dance had shifted gears, and because I knew they were doing sort of like the special edition hardbacks and that sort of thing, and like sort of the reprints, but I didn't know they were publishing a lot of new authors. And I happened to catch that post, and I was just, I emailed my agent. I was like, well, wait a minute, have we committed to this other deal yet? And he's like, no. I said, would you mind checking with Kevin? Because I know he likes my stuff, you know, and see what he thinks about it. And he did. And so basically we kind of got offers from both of them. And Cemetery Dance was the one I preferred for a lot of reasons, mostly because I respected Kevin and thought he would do a good job with it. And so far I've had no complaints. He's been an incredible editor and very easy to work with.
We've had him on the podcast previously. He is such a lovely guy and he loves what he does, which I think helps a lot. You see that there's a couple of publishers that I deal with personally, like the actual people behind the scenes, and it's the ones that love what they're doing, which teams seem to push their authors more.
Yeah.
And I think with Kevin, since he kind of took over parts of running bits of Cemetery Dance, he's got so many new authors on board. But like you said, he used to do more of the special editions. Yeah. So it's nice to see that. And yeah, it goes to show that if you have a passion for it, people do go back to you.
Yeah, that was the word I was going to use. You can tell that he's just passionate about horror in general. Mm-hmm. And he knows a ton about the genre. He knows the old and the new, is from what I can tell. And so I've got a lot of respect for him. And he works very hard from what I can tell. Like I sent him an email and I'm getting responses like usually same day, which is crazy in publishing. That's just not something that usually happens. And I hope he doesn't burn himself out. That's the only thing that would worry me, but cause he does really work at it. I know he's got his other job too.
So. Yeah. He does a lot of discs in his spare time.
Yeah.
You know, so he obviously does love this very much, but no, he's always been very, very good with us as well. So he's very, very quick at answering and very good at that.
He's got good time management skills, I would say.
Oh yeah. You have to, it's a matter of work. He like it does. So Holy Ghost Road, tell us a bit about this book. It seems very kind of the Southern Gothic feel again.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a quest novel. It's actually sort of a road novel, I would call it. And I think the premise is pretty simple to grasp, but I hope I kind of layer things a little bit from there. But it's basically in the voice, which this surprised me a little bit. Sometimes you surprise yourself when you're writing. The voice is a 15-year-old teenage girl named Forrest. And this was just kind of the voice I heard on this particular book when I started writing. And at first, all I had was that voice. And she was trying to get away, get to, of all places, her grandmother's house. And so a few people have drawn Little Red Riding Hood comparisons, which I don't mind, actually, but that wasn't really what I was going for. But yeah, she's witnessed something in her family's barn that appears, at least in her estimation, to be the local pastor, who is sort of a celebrity in the small town. He appears to be making some sort of a deal or communication with some sort of demon. And she witnesses this in her kind of sleepwalking state, because she's a sleepwalker. And so she's not completely sure what she witnessed, but she knows that whatever she witnessed, he didn't like. And now he's basically trying to shut her up. And she knows the only person that can help her is her grandmother, who's the only person she's ever met in her life that would believe a story like this, because her grandmother is sort of, I guess, a mystic of sorts. And the problem is she has to get about 40 miles across the county line to her grandmother's on foot. And she doesn't have a phone, and she doesn't really have anybody to help her, because the county, the people in the area are sort of all in with this kind of pastor. He's sort of almost a cult figure there. And if he, all he has to do is put the word out, and nobody will help her. So it's sort of a road novel, her on foot. She does meet a few companions along the way, and then and has to deal with quite a bit of her own, I guess, psychological horror and spiritual horror along the way.
Cool. Sounds good. Sounds very, very good. I'm hopefully going to get to read this soon, because it's on my list to read.
Awesome.
I'm a long, well, long,
I,
long.
I, all I can say is that I hope the book is better than my summary of it, because I really suck at those things. And as I was talking,
I feel like quite well.
I was like, oh gosh, this is bad. But yeah,
nice. You sold it well, to be fair.
Okay, good. All right. I always feel awkward doing those things.
Most authors do.
Yeah.
So I found out. Awesome. No, so you can grab that book. What was released out on this one? Because
Cemetery Dance does a little bit interesting where they do a Kindle release on December the 6th, and then the paperback will start shipping on December 20th. You can pre-order now on Cemetery Dance, and I think the pre-order will go up on Amazon when the Kindle link goes up.
But by the time this comes out, it should be in the middle of that date. So,
oh, cool.
Hopefully. Okay. No, my release schedule at the moment. But awesome. So go, and if it's not out by now, pre-order. If it's out by now, go and pick up a copy over at Cemetery Dance or at Amazon or anywhere you can get your books. So awesome. So before we finish up, I have to ask the last question of the night is, what is your third and final bloody good read?
My final one is a book called Serena by a guy named Ron Rash. I don't know if you're familiar with Ron Rash over there, but he's one that probably best represents where I am now as a writer and where I would hope to be one day. He's a sort of Southern writer, more of an Southern Appalachian writer. And Serena let me just give you a little summary first. The title character, Serena, is sort of like a timber baron at this timber camp in the early 1900s. and she is just probably one of the best villains I have ever read. She's just incredibly cruel and basically rules her husband with an iron fist. But she has a henchman named Galloway, and he's another one of the better villains. I mean, Ron Rash just does incredible villains. And there's nothing really overtly supernatural in this book, although there's some kind of folky magic, I guess I would say. But with Serena, there's also, I mean, I know I'm not supposed to mention more than one book, but there's a novella that goes along with it called In the Valley that is sort of like a sequel to Serena. So a lot of people may have read Serena but missed that, and it is amazing too. I would definitely recommend that you pick that up if you read Serena. They made a movie. All these books, I think they've made movies out of, but it was supposedly horrible. The Serena movie. So if you saw the Serena movie, don't judge the book on that. It's like a Shakespearean level kind of tragedy in the Appalachians. It's really good.
Awesome. And you can get it on Kindle Unlimited in the UK, possibly in the US. I'm not sure what your Kindle Unlimited is like over there, but it's over on Kindle Unlimited. So go give it a try. No excuse not to try it, to be fair, because it's free.
And try all of Ron Rash's stuff. All his stuff is amazing. And I think he's another good example of this horror adjacent. I like, you know, he might not be classified as horror, but I think horror readers would love Ron Rash because a lot of his stuff's dark. He's got there's a slight twinge of supernatural stuff going on at times. And Jeff, definitely check him out.
Awesome. Brilliant pick. Not one we've had in there before. So it's nice to have something fresh. Awesome.
That's good.
A huge thank you for coming on the podcast this week. Yeah. Is there anything you're working on currently or anything you've got coming up? I know you've got the Year of the Storm coming out in February.
That's right.
But what have we got coming out later in the year, next year?
That's it for the time being. I am working on some stuff, but nothing that I can really mention definitively that's scheduled or anything like that. I do, if you don't mind, I'll mention again, because anybody that likes my stuff, and this is one of the perils of having the two names going, I'll just mention again, I've also got three books under Hank Early. And those are more crime, but they definitely have horror elements in it and in them. The first one's Heaven's Crooked Finger. And it's about the son of a fundamentalist preacher in North Georgia, fundamentalist snake handling preacher in North Georgia. And the son grows up to be a private detective. And his first investigation is when he comes home back to the mountains to find out if his dad is alive or dead, because there are rumors of both, but that's the first in the series. So
awesome. So go and check out those ones as well. As you know, I do love a bit of crime on this podcast as well. So load of new stuff to read. Damn it. There's so much more to put on the list.
The same way. Never keep up.
Never too much. Never too much. Again, a huge thank you for coming on the podcast. As I always offer up, where can people find you if you'd like to be found?
Really, the only place to find me these days is Twitter.
While it's still here.
While it's still here. That's right. And if Twitter goes, then maybe you won't find me anywhere except for hopefully an occasional book or a short story. But it's at busfuloflosers.com. Busfuloflosers.
And we'll put that into the link in the description below as well. So
awesome.
So go and follow John over there as well. And again, huge thank you to John for coming on the podcast this week. As always, a huge shout out to our sponsor, Abominable Book Club. They're the UK's biggest and best horror and thriller book service, bringing the wonders of a haunted bookshop straight to your door each month. I've got one waiting to come out next week, so I'm looking forward to that one as well. So they have two boxes. They have the Full Guts box, which is a box with a brand new book, a possibly haunted secondhand book, and a indie title or a short story magazine or something along them lines. You also get UK snacks, get some drinks, you get pins, you get stickers and random awesome stuff in there as well. go and check them out. I'm not particularly saying it very well this week for some reason. My words are all over the place. But go and check them out. You also got the Bare Bones box. If you do just want the books, don't blame you. Books are awesome. So if you just want the books, you can pay a little bit less and go for the Bare Bones. But I do highly recommend going for the Full Gut to get some amazing stuff in there. And you can use the code BloodyGoodReads at checkout to get 10% off your first box. And I will post the most recent one over on Instagram. So go and check us out over on Instagram at BloodyGoodReads, and you'll see kind of what we're getting in the box. And I do have a random YouTube link that shows you a box opening. Go and check that out if you want to get bored of me talking. As always, you can follow me over on Twitter at BloodyGoodReads, while Twitter is still a thing. I am apparently on Mastodon as well. I don't know my link. I'll put it in the link below. I don't know what it is like. We'll find out. You can also catch us over on Facebook at the Bloody Good Reads Book Club, and on Instagram at Bloody Good Reads as well. You can also see You can also catch us over on the monthly podcast as well, Bloody Good Screen Movie Club. I've just done some bits with Hunter Shea as well. By the time this one comes out, we should have done the Dr. Death episode from the Puppet Master movies. If you do like the podcast, do give it a like or a subscribe or 5 stars, 1 star if you don't like it, but try not to if you can. Do leave a comment, review. It gets us out there and into more people's ears as well. As always, I've been your host, Mark Goddard, and I'll see you next time.